Hello, I'm Greg Livingston, and I'm here with Justin Lindsay to talk about his game, Luniform. Justin, could you explain Luniform for those of us who haven't seen it before?
Sure thing. Luniform is a puzzle arcade game, basically where your goal is to collect these colored stars into colored shapes. And you're swapping these shapes around to match the colors with the stars so that they'll fill up. Each level kind of represents a piece of a planet that you're building, and your goal is to try and create a solar system.
Okay. And there's actually, I think it maxes out at three colors, right? You just get blue, yellow, and green.
There's also a purple color, I think, on the very, very last couple levels.
Oh, man. Yeah, the last planet I haven't beaten yet. It gets pretty crazy.
Yeah, I think four colors is probably the max that's reasonable in that game before it just gets too insane.
So is that a matter of experimentation that you arrived at four colors?
Yeah, it was kind of, there's kind of this trade-off in cognitive burden where, like, if there's too much on the screen or if it's moving too fast and there's too many kind of things that you have to think about with the different colors. At a certain point, once you, some could argue that four might be too much for most people, but I think that's kind of like the top level of where you can kind of still process everything and make sense of it without it being just a whole bunch of crazy nonsense flying on the screen. I also was trying to pick some good colors for people that might be colorblind, which I recognize could be a problem with this game where you rely on the colors, but I'm hoping that the colors kind of help for most colorblind people, but that'll be up to them to decide, I think.
Right. So you mentioned cognitive burden. Was there any kind of guideline regarding perception that you used when building out these levels?
So I was trying to, there's this nice chart that kind of floats around on the web where they kind of describe like real-time strategy games, and there's kind of this trade-off between the strategy aspects, like how deeply you have to think about something versus how quickly you have to process it, like how fast the things are moving. And so like StarCraft tends to be on like the super high tiers of cognitive burden in terms of like processing all the things on the screen. And I kind of wanted to hit much lower than StarCraft because you're just dealing with simple shapes. So I was trying to get it to where, like, yeah, it's kind of fast and there's a little bit of a reaction component to it, but also only take the patterns and how the game works only so deep. So that a way you can still kind of process everything that's going on.
So the star showers that come in and fill in bits of your planet, they come in infinitely repeated patterns. And if I understand correctly, it's always the same sequence, just repeating over and over.
Yeah, that's correct.
So do you imagine that players solve patterns and they'll set up like certain memorized sequences of arranging the hexes? Or do you think they'll just observe and rearrange the hexes as they go?
I think when people kind of first approach it, the game can feel fairly hectic as there's a lot of information to process. But if you play a level a couple of times, I kind of hope that people would start to recognize the pattern. And my hope with that is that, as we were talking about the cognitive burden part, is that the pattern would kind of help reduce that. So that instead of like watching every single star shower that kind of comes down in the different groups of them, you start to realize, okay, well, I know that one's going to be yellow and then that one's going to be blue. So I can kind of not look at it directly. I can kind of just know, okay, well, I know that one's going to hit as yellow at this point, or this one's going to hit as blue. And I think that's kind of the arcade part is sort of reacting to those patterns. And I think the puzzle part is sort of figuring out those patterns. There are a lot of levels in like the first four planets where I feel like if you solve the patterns, you can make very quick work of the levels, but the last planet has a lot of more of that arcadey reaction twitchiness as you're trying to find like safe spots to work and start filling in the shapes. So The patterns come into play, but that one has a little bit more of a reaction speed component to it.
Is Luna the last planet?
Luna is indeed the last planet.
Okay, yeah, I'm still working on that one. I guess I'll put it that way.
It's pretty hard. I actually still have trouble with some of those levels myself.
Oh man, and you're the developer.
Yeah.
I definitely feel like the first four planets are quote unquote solvable, or like I got a feel for the pattern and could kind of play without actually seeing the stars. But the black hole features some interesting star trajectories where they'll curve and twist around, and I feel like the way everything was organized, the black hole actually played more towards the Twitch side where I didn't need to memorize, and I also didn't want to memorize. Like, wasn't as helpful.
Yeah, the black hole, I kind of came up with the mechanic of the stars kind of twisting like that. And when I tried to build out a couple levels of like that, it felt like it ramped up the difficulty curve quite a bit, from just the stars that hit one shape and the stars that kind of explode and hit a couple. Those curvy stars kind of really feel much harder because, yeah, they're more reaction based rather than the pattern. And so I kind of move those off into the black hole as kind of like, well, here's an experiment. I don't know how people will feel about this in terms of the rest of the game, but I kind of wanted to keep it there as something that had gotten built out.
Yeah, I can imagine if that got combined with the arrow blocks or something, that would be insane. So I've also noticed that when a sequence repeats, that there's a little bit of a pause time between, one shower ending and the next shower beginning. How did you figure the amount of time to leave there?
So I think in some of the earlier levels, they tend to have, I think, between like 3 to 5 seconds between most of the waves, with some of the waves offset to prevent dead time on the screen. Originally, I tried it without too many breaks, but I found that those breaks are good to give people time to think and respond, especially as they're sort of learning the game. So I sort of each play test, I would kind of use like a pseudo binary search to find a good time. So like if 6 seconds was too slow, I would try 3 seconds. And if that was too fast, then I might try like 4.5 and like try to tweak it that way until it kind of felt like people were making it through more of the levels and they didn't hit such a wall early on with it being too fast for them. So the other thing is I found out that when people find out they can speed everything up by like clicking and holding or like long pressing if you're on the tablets, the game tends to feel a lot better for them because they're not waiting for the inevitable to happen. Because there's also the other side of it where people will get bored if they're too long. And so that tends to alleviate the boredom where you know, like, oh, okay, I can speed this up because I know I'm going to win.
Right. When you have the solution, you don't need to wait around for it to happen.
Yeah. Because that just feels boring when you're just sitting there and you're like, okay, well, I know I've won, but now I have to wait.
I actually really liked the pause, and I didn't appreciate it at first, but when I maybe my second session or so, I started to realize that the pause was there and that I was actually using that time to absorb and reflect on information.
Oh, that's good. That's what I was hoping people would do.
So, each world offers a new gameplay element. Like you mentioned, that there's the large stars that hit multiple hexes, or there's the arrow panels that redirect stars. And each world, when it introduces a new idea, the first level is the easiest one. But those first, like tutorial levels, can also be kind of tricky in their own respect. So, how did you hit that sweet spot where you were able to teach what the new thing was about without being pedantic or boring?
Yeah, it was actually a real challenge. I tried to start off basically with like a simple or a quick win and then try to curve the difficulty up with each level until like the later levels of the planet. And mostly I tried to make it so the first two levels are really about just learning the mechanic and using it. and like recognizing the mechanic and trying to repeat it a couple times so that by the time you hit really around the third level of that planet, then you're like, okay, I kind of understand the mechanic, and now I'm getting like my first real challenge of applying this mechanic. Especially with the arrow ones, the locked hexes tend to throw people off because it's the first time that, oh, I can't do the thing that I've been doing the whole game, which is switching the shapes around. And now I have these other shapes. And so there's sort of two hurdles to get people over. One is realizing, oh, okay, well, I can take the same sort of idea that I had earlier, which is that I can swap the shapes. It's just now only I've got these different shapes to swap, which are the arrow hexes. So I can apply that same idea, but now something different happens with these where they redirect the stars. So I kind of tried to build it out where you just have like two simple redirections on the first level, and then now the second level, I think, has four redirections that you have to do. And then by the time you get to the third one, you have to kind of really kind of work through, okay, which direction are these things going?
Okay. I've definitely played puzzle games where they just do the first two levels, where you get the idea and then move on to a new idea, and it gets tiresome when you don't really get tested on it.
Yeah, I was hoping that by the time that you get to the last level, it really feels like you kind of have to take everything that you learn from the previous ones and the previous planets and try to. I tried to make it so it was like a summary of all of it, but then a challenge of all the mechanics you've learned up until that point.
Okay. And how did you end up with six levels per planet? How did you make sure that would be a good amount to make sure puzzles were unique and still interesting?
So this one's kind of funny. So part of ending up at six levels was trying to find like a good stopping point for people before they went on to something new. And then the other part of it is kind of dictated by how many icons I could fit on a single screen with the planet model. So for making the levels unique, I tried to use unique combinations of the hex shapes and like unique rotations for each level. And then tried to find like interesting ways that they interacted with the mechanic that felt just a little bit more challenging than the last way that you saw it. So with the hexes, it's only so many different ways that you can arrange them. And part of that was like a design constraint of I decided on that geometry because I thought it was interesting. And then part of it was because I thought those combinations, kind of led to some unique patterns for the levels.
It's a lot easier to handle adjacent panels when they're hexagons, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Lunaform also has like a shop where you can get upgrades. Like there's a shield to protect your hexes from damage, and there's another that lets you spill excess energy or whatever into adjacent hexes once you've filled one up. And I was wondering, did you design Lunaform with the intention that this could be beaten without the upgrades? Or do you see them as kind of critical to gameplay?
I think it's definitely possible to beat Lunaform without using any upgrades. I would say that it probably starts to get impossible to beat it without upgrades and without taking any damage. So the first level where you get the where you earn the shield is meant to sort of teach and force you to use it. So you would need to use the shield in order to not take any damage, if that makes any sense. So
Right.
you could technically beat that level without using the shield at all. And I was trying to make it so that people who wanted to use it could and have an easier time, and people that didn't want to use it didn't. Hopefully they don't feel like they have to. It just takes a little bit longer to beat it without that. But I think in terms of the game, if you don't use any upgrades, it definitely makes the later parts of the game much, much more challenging, which I would say is kind of a way of inducing like a hard mode, so to speak, is to try and beat it without the upgrades. If you try to beat it without taking any damage, like try to perfectly play each level, I would say that's amazing. I definitely can't even do that. And if somebody can do that, I would buy them a dinner. I would fly out to wherever they are and I would buy them dinner.
You heard it here first.
Yep.
So you mentioned that that would be like a hard mode. Would you consider that the skill ceiling of Luniform?
Yeah, definitely. If you can beat in the game without using any of the upgrades, I would say is I can barely do that myself, so that is definitely like I wouldn't use myself as a gauge, but I feel like that's probably the hardest that the game gets.
Okay. It's also surprising just how diverse the upgrades are and how much space, how much you can make just out of pure space.
Yeah, I was trying to think of upgrades that would be helpful. And interestingly enough, I think some of the upgrades are more useful in different situations than others. Like the Star Barrier is kind of an interesting upgrade. And I was trying to think of a way to make it work for all the colors. But I was like, well, it might just be good to keep it for a single color because I don't, it would be kind of hard to build out an interface that lets you pick the color of a skill before you use it. And that skill, to describe it, it basically just takes a little bit of a circle and spins it around your grid so that any of the stars passing through it change their color. And that one is very useful kind of early on and becomes useful again when you're in the later levels and you have to kind of destroy things. And you're like, okay, well, it would be great if they were not this color so that I could destroy them. But its usefulness is limited in the puzzle levels in the middle where you're using those arrows and kind of redirecting things because, okay, well, you definitely need them to be like blue in some cases. So turning them to yellow wouldn't be as advantageous. But my hope is like some of the upgrades, like Time Stop, gives you, since it stops all the stars and they're not moving, gives you a couple seconds to kind of think, like, okay, where are these things going to hit? And get a little bit of a chance to react to them. And then the one that is probably my favorite is the shield swap upgrade, which it gives you a very, very small little shield as you're moving hexes around. And I think that's really cool because it lets you kind of you can double tap on a hex to count as a swap with itself, and that basically lets you shield anywhere on your grid whenever you need it. So I think there's a lot of interesting, I don't know, gameplay that you can do with that upgrade.
Yeah. And finally, when it comes to the theory of video games, what do you think is the most important? The game itself, the developer, or the player?
This is a good question. So I would say that I think all three are important, but I think to me, the player is the most important. And the reason why I'd say that is the player is the lens through which the game is interacted with. And it's that lens through which you see how your game kind of affects people. And I think part of the challenge is communicating in such a way that anyone who's playing the game would receive the feelings or the fun that you're intending. I kind of look at the game and the developer as the tools that are crafting that experience. And I would say at Gamescape, for example, the lens of a 5-year-old child playing the game kind of differs from the lens of an adult. Or even like a 10-year-old playing the game. They're each going to have a different experience, and the 5-year-old might be the most frustrated by the controls or the difficulty. But I think like the adult or the 10-year-old might have a really good time and really enjoy it and spend some time with it. So I think developers kind of need good observational skills to iterate on the game and get better at communicating with all the different kind of players who might play the game. But it's ultimately the players that are going to be the ones having the experience. Like I have an experience as a developer creating it, but really what it's about is the experience that people get playing it. So I kind of think the players are the most important.
It sounds like you're concerned about a wide spectrum of players, too.
Yeah, actually, one of the things I had when I was first creating this is I kind of wanted to build a game that wasn't violent. Which is just sort of because I myself play lots of games that tend to be on the role-playing side and have lots of combat, and I find combat very interesting. But as a challenge, like, okay, well, not everybody likes violence. And so I was trying to think of like, oh, okay, well, what's kind of something that's not violent? And so that's kind of, this is where I ended up, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's still fast and exciting and makes you think, but it's not like nobody's exploding.
Yeah, and I mean, exploding people are a lot of fun. It's just kind of something to think about that not everybody enjoys exploding people.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for joining me. Luniform is currently out. Could you tell us what platforms?
Yeah, so it's currently out on Steam. It's also available on the Google Play Store and the Apple iOS Store. And if you don't like Steam, you can also get it on itch.io. And Steam and itch.io have builds for PC, Mac, and Linux.
Nice. Yeah, I know not everybody's happy with DRM, so.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that there was a DRM-free option as well.
Nice. Well, thanks for talking.
Yeah, thanks so much, Greg. I really appreciate it.